Hello and welcome to The Road to Autonomy. The Road to Autonomy is brought to you in part by Stantec Generation AV. Stantec Generation AV combines some of the most experienced AV experts in the industry with the resources of a global engineering firm. Stantec Generation AV provides education, consulting, assessment, and guidance to any industry interested in autonomous vehicles. Learn more at Stantec.com. Hello and welcome to The Road to Autonomy. I'm your host, Grayson Brulte. On today's episode, we're absolutely honored to have Matthew Lipka, Head of Policy Neuro, and Burke Hoffman, Head of Public Policy and Regulatory Affairs, Zooks. Welcome to the podcast, gentlemen.
Great to be here. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thanks so much, Grayson. It's great to be back.
Bert, I'm happy to have you back. Matthew, super excited to have you here. Your gentlemen are both founding members of SAVE, which is doing phenomenal work and is really valuing design. What is SAVE Coalition and why was it founded? Matthew, you want to kick it off for us, sir?
Absolutely. So the SAVE Coalition stands for the Coalition for Safe Autonomous Vehicles and Electrification. And it's a group of autonomous vehicle developers that have in common that we're building electric vehicles, that we believe the future is electric, and that we're building novel vehicles that are designed to address many of the challenges in our transportation system, from sharing vehicles to vehicles that are dangerous for pedestrians to vehicles that are not accessible. And Bert and I, as we're talking last year, about this being kind of a missing piece of the discussion about autonomous vehicles is how we can reinvent the car when we introduce this new autonomy software. We came together with Local Motors, who is building a vehicle which is a shuttle and is really accessible and novel as well, announced earlier this year the new SAVE Coalition.
So Bert, in the old days, I would say, oh, you're at a bar meeting up, having beers and having a good old time. But this was during the heyday of COVID. So was it emails back and forth and said, okay, Local Motors, you're building a bespoke vehicle. Okay, Matthew, Neuro's building a bespoke delivery vehicle. And here's Zooks building a bespoke vehicle as well. Was it just a series of emails and chats that said, wait a second, we believe in the same mission. We can come together and do something?
Partially. I think I have to go back through my emails and check, but Matthew and I connected at an event on autonomous vehicles in DC, maybe late 2017 or early 2018. We got to talking, and at that event, we were representing our companies, Bert at Zooks, Matthew at Neuro, and we were around the table with other representatives of people of companies that were working on autonomy. But the one thing that Matthew, that Zooks and Neuro had in common is that we were both working on purpose-built, fully autonomous vehicle. We were not retrofitting. And so that sort of stuck out to me as an opportunity worth pursuing. And I remember getting an email from Matthew that he was going to be out in the Bay Area to see if he wanted to get together to talk about things we had in common outside of our professional lives, but in our companies. In terms of what could we work on together. And out of, I think, a coffee date at Phil's in San Mateo, we started to really sketch out what a coalition could look like for those of us that were doing novel vehicles, because that's what makes us unique as developers in the AV space. There are a lot of other companies, but they're retrofitting. And we've got a unique point of view because we made the deliberate decision to not retrofit.
Matthew, you go on a coffee date. Years later, you end up getting married. What did he say to you to get hitched?
We face a lot of the same policy challenges and opportunities when you're building a novel vehicle, right? So I was working on our exemption that was granted in 2020 that allowed us to build the second generation vehicle with no mirrors, no windshield, and things that don't make sense for a vehicle like Neuro's. For context, Neuro's building a vehicle that is just for delivering goods locally. There's no space for human occupants in it and operates fully autonomously on the road. The policy challenges around the Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards, these rules that were written over the last 60 years, I think the median age is 1980, right? So it's a geriatric millennial, the FMVSS, and these rules don't apply straightforwardly to novel vehicle, right? A vehicle with no people in it. How do you apply the seatbelt rule? That's a common challenge, but it also is a common opportunity because if you're rethinking the car, then you are not going to be building an internal combustion engine. You're not going to be building a vehicle that is designed just for protecting those inside is also going to be thinking about those outside the vehicle. So I think there's a lot of opportunities that creates, and both in the robo-taxi as well as in the delivery space.
And we both have a, I think, similarly strong point of view that the right application of autonomous technology is not taking a conventional car, which is optimized around a human driver, right? It has everything you need for you to see out of the window safely and rear view mirrors, side view mirrors, everything for the human to drive. The right application of autonomous technology is not taking the autonomous technology and putting the compute in the trunk of a conventional car and putting sensors on all around it. The right application is actually to reimagine what that vehicle looks like, what that form factor looks like. Over time, I think you'll start to see people get it. You started to see a lot of others in the industry sort of have that aha moment, that light bulb going off, that if we're doing this technology, we might as well reimagine the vehicle.
It's silly just to slap LiDAR and radar and all sorts of components on a vehicle to commercialize it. One, I think it's extremely dangerous because somebody could grab the wheel, and I don't care what anybody says. You talk to a common person, they want to do a prank, they're going to try and grab the wheel. But Bert, your solution with Zoox, there is no steering wheel, there is no pedals. Not only is it better for safety, but you can build really cool experiences when you design it from the ground up. And then Matthew, on your side with the Neuro vehicle, you become part of the neighborhood. You can, there's a new Pixar movie for cars, you can wrap it in there and you build trust in the local community. That's where I think a lot of this is going. So you're back there in 2017, Neuro's working on a custom vehicle, Zoox is working on a custom vehicle, and then you have everybody else says, oh, we're just going to put LiDARs and radars on it. Is that what kind of drew you two gentlemen together and said, wait a second, we're on this same mission?
Yeah, I think that the industry has done a pretty good job of having a common point of view, but then you sometimes lose the things that make some perspectives unique. We saw that with some of the legislation over the last year. The novel vehicles address different items in the state code. So for example, it's not just the federal government that requires side view mirrors. Local and state government requires side view mirrors too. And so when we started addressing that with state governments, that was something that not everyone in the industry cared about. There was also a bill this year about California that says all AVs should be EVs, right? That created a lot of contention in the industry because not everyone is choosing an electric vehicle to slap their LiDAR on. But because we're starting from the ground up, that's something that we totally believe in. And so we were able to come together around some of these policy issues that not everyone can embrace. So I think there's some real policy aspects to it. And then there's also the safety aspect of this. Every year we're seeing more and more deaths. Last year, we saw the biggest increase on record ever, and that just increases the urgency for doing this, and we're not going to only be able to address this problem with autonomous software. We need to do more than that, and so I think there's a common vision that rethinking the car can make a really big difference in this public health crisis of traffic deaths.
The public, it's disgusting. It's terrible. It's a pandemic. It goes back to distracted driving. They try and find something, they don't listen. They don't pay attention. My father said this, and I'll never forget this. The driving a car is a deadly weapon, and it's ingrained in my head. But most people, they just do la-di-da-di-da, do whatever I want, and they act in manners that are not appropriate, and they shouldn't drive. So that's why we need autonomy, is to stop this pandemic. And Bert, as the Zoox vehicle gets ready to commercialize, are you running into, like Matthew described, the side view mirror policy issue? Are there any policy issues that to a bespoke vehicle that you're still trying to actively overcome as you prepare to commercialize the Zoox product?
I think one of the most interesting things about this journey that we're on in terms of bringing this technology to market is what people think about it and how they think it's going to roll out. And the first thing to know is it's going to be a very shallow ramp into society for these fully autonomous vehicles to start driving around on public roads. But when I started looking into this industry, and I think we discussed this when I was last time, is like, I thought, of course, like the right approach was going to be taking a car and putting radar, LiDARs and cameras on it, putting compute in the trunk and calling it autonomous. You know, that was to me how it was going to happen. But then you actually think about it and you realize that the real problems are going to be solved when you develop and come up with a new form factor. Very early on in our development process, when we were doing some outreach and engagement with law enforcement and first responders, their first reaction to us was, well, that's really cute. We love your vehicle, but it's lacking things like windshield wipers and side view mirrors and rear view mirrors. And guess what? Our state vehicle code requires all of that. So if we see it driving around on the public roads, and well, first of all, we don't know how the state would license you without that kind of technology, without those kinds of things on it. But we can cite you if you don't have that kind of equipment on your vehicle. And so that's the kind of thinking and policy and regulation that we had initially encountered. And so, you know, when you want to build trust in an industry, when you want to introduce new ideas, when you want to help educate people, you never want to go alone. You want to build trust. And so one way of doing that is building a coalition. And so we look for partners that are taking similar approaches where we can offer similar but also different points of view and help to further educate a public on the promise of this technology, the safety promise, the mobility promise, the sustainability promise of this technology. And I think that's what's so unique about the opportunity before us. There's also a huge appetite to revisit, to update maybe obsolete or antiquated regulations that haven't been touched in years, because there are a lot of regulators and policymakers across the country and around the world that do want to embrace this kind of innovation, that do want these vehicles on their roadways. And so it's been really, really exciting to work with those kinds of people.
Matthew, did you run into the same policy challenges that Bert described, since the Neuro vehicle, I'll use the word, is extremely unique to anything a law enforcement or a first responder or a politician might have seen before?
We definitely had the same conversations with these law enforcement officials, and I don't think that any of them have any interest in giving us a ticket for not having side view mirrors. But it's just, an example of how when you start to rethink the vehicle, you raise new questions and have to figure out new processes. We have 1.5% of the vehicles on the U.S. roads are now electric, but there's not enough training done on how to deal with electric vehicle fires. We're trying to get ahead of that by engaging with policymakers, because an element of this is, of course, advocacy, but it's also about engagement education, because a lot of people don't imagine these use cases. When we started 5 years ago, everyone assumed that autonomous vehicles would be personally owned cars, because that's all we've ever had before. Now everyone's talking about fleet models, but even under that, California's regulations initially did not allow for the transportation of goods in autonomous vehicles. They said no motor trucks, and California, that means no vehicle that transports goods. And so they had to go through the process of updating that. And so the more that we can engage with people at the beginning of that process about our vision for this and encourage them to have flexible regulations that can accommodate new use cases and new kinds of vehicles that can improve safety, reduce emissions, create more jobs, that I think is a really important part of what we're trying to achieve.
And by the way, the fun fact of this whole journey has been, up until a couple of weeks ago, the California Vehicle Code required all vehicles to have mufflers. Of course, you don't see the California Highway Patrol pulling over all of the electric vehicles that are now part of the state EV fleet. But as part of one of the changes that we were able to push forward in the state, we were able to eliminate the requirement for mufflers in vehicles. Of course, electric vehicles do not need a muffler.
Thanks to Senator Wieckowski on the great work there.
That's right.
That is a great example of an outdated law that makes no sense. Maybe the lawyers from Midas or the Muffler Man ensured that it got in there, but it's an outdated thing in a state that is clearly all in on electrification. Matthew, I'm picking up on a trend here. Are two pillars of the founding of the SAVE Coalition training and education?
Yes, definitely. Education of policymakers, of law enforcement, is something we're looking to accomplish, because I don't think it's necessarily obvious that an innovative vehicle is going to be the application of this, right? It's hard to imagine that when you think about, when you're used to a certain car, or until we saw the iPhone, we never realized it could do these things. So I do think that education is a big part of it. We're just beginning our journey here. We just launched this summer, but we're planning on doing outreach to introduce ourselves in Washington, D.C. and in states around the country.
I'll give you a little bit of Silicon Valley anecdote here. So when the iPhone first gets announced, there's all this hoopla around. There was no keyboard. Everybody had the BlackBerry, which I had, and we all called them Crackberries. Oh, there's no keyboard. There's no keyboard. This thing's never going to work. You can't type on it.
I'm going to send you a pin message.
Oh, there you go. BBIM. And all suddenly people got used to it. And then you never hear a complaint now about an iPhone not having a keyboard. Will that be the same thing for autonomous electric vehicles where there's no steering wheel, there's no pedals? Oh, you got to have that. You got to have it. And then all suddenly, it's like you never think about it. Is that where we're getting, Bert?
Predictions are hard, especially when they're about the future. Great quote. It wouldn't surprise me that if riding in a vehicle without a steering wheel will be at some point normalized. People have made predictions about exactly when that would be, and I'm not here to do that right now. But what I can tell you is based on the experiences that I've had in our test vehicles, after the first couple of minutes of getting in it, it just feels very, very normal. And you realize that there is no steering wheel. We have made it from point A to point B safely. There was a period in time when we were testing on private test tracks, doing investor pitches, when our CEO would send me out in front of the vehicle as it was coming at me. And I was pretty confident that it was going to stop. I wasn't 100% sure, but it stopped every time. I'm still here to talk about that. Yeah, I mean, all of these kinds of experiences, right, should become normal. But it does speak to one of the greatest challenges of development of this technology, and that's ensuring that it's safe. We want to educate people about how we are developing safe systems, safe vehicles, the opportunities to develop vehicles with proactive safety measures as opposed to reactive safety measures, right? This is one of the biggest opportunities of this technology is amazing safety innovations that can be more proactive instead of reactive. We can talk about that. We're moving people. So, you know, you can ensure things like 100% seatbelt use before the vehicle even starts to drive. Airbags that can deploy in advance of an impact, which is something that obviously can't happen today. Seatbelts that can tension maybe before an impact, slowing down if you realize that, or if the system realizes that there might be some obstacles in front of it that it needs to avoid. The first rule of these systems is very fundamental. Don't hit anything. And so I think a huge opportunity to bake safety in, to educate lawmakers, policymakers, members of the public on how we're developing safety. And also, Grayson, as we've talked about over the years, you know, nothing beats demonstrations and physically interacting with these technologies. So hopefully at some point in the future, we'll have a chance to do that as well.
Yeah, you're talking to the host of demo days here. So, one stat on that, people that have interacted with an autonomous vehicle, more than 75% of them say, I trust autonomous vehicles, I would use it again. But people that haven't, the number is much lower. The reality is, until you have seen it and interacted with the vehicles and seen how they actually operate like a defensive driver, it's hard to really conceptualize. I've actually never even met anyone that's seen the Nuro and said, oh yeah, that's the size I thought it was going to be. Everyone's always smaller, bigger. And so even that is hard to imagine just from seeing it avoid the noise on TV. And so I think that's something that until you interact with it, it's hard to build that public trust. So we just need to do more of that over time, especially with a novel vehicle. It's an extra responsibility for us.
But Matthew, I want to give you and the Nuro team a lot of credit here. You partner with brands in the communities that the community members know, like, and trust. Domino's Pizza, it's known in the community. Kroger grocery store is delivered in the community. You're providing meaningful value in the community. You're not just testing or delivering from Joe Subs that nobody knows. Why was the decision made as you build that trust and partner with these world-renowned brands and Kroger and Domino's? Was that to help build trust?
Definitely a part of it. Our first vertical is grocery. That's the first one we started with. Back in 2018, we launched with Kroger in Scottsdale, Arizona, had the first fully autonomous service open to the general public. And if you think about your grocery store, it's located in a neighborhood, located close to where people live. And that really shaped everything about what we did, because we need to build a vehicle that is designed for navigating a neighborhood. Well, there's a lot of pedestrians. So we put a huge focus on pedestrian safety. These are slower speed routes. So we have started with a vehicle that's slower speed. And I think these are a lot of opportunities created by that, because we want our streets to have more vehicles that make room for other road users and cyclists and families without riding their bikes. We want our neighbors to drive slower and not speed down the neighborhood streets. And so that really shaped a lot of what we did in our product design. And that has led to, I think, a lot more public trust. Of course, Kroger is also the nation's largest grocer. Domino's is the number one pizza company in the world. Walmart, CVS are also leaders in their fields. Our partners are all helping us grow to scale because critically, this technology, it's a vehicle that we're manufacturing. And so you can't just build it at small scale and have it be affordable. Because a big part of our vision is that we're going to make delivery affordable for as many people as possible. And so you need to build at economies of scale. And that means we start with partnering with these institutions that are parts of their neighborhoods, but also can help us scale quickly, get to those economies and scale, and serve local commerce in a new way.
I give you a few little tips here for ways to build trust. Start having liquor and wine delivery at wine.com, and you can deliver. Well, there's certain communities around the United States that would love this thing, and they call the Neuro the wine bot. Instead of the R1, you're going to have the wine bot that's going to show up with my wine for the evening.
Well, we're big fans of Mothers Against Drunk Driving. Worked with them on their Houston Walk with Matt event recently. Well, one stat I found surprising, or two, is one is at Houston, where we are deployed and our biggest operations right now, is the number one place where drunk driving does happen in America. It's the biggest metropolitan area, even though it's fourth, at least as of over the last decade, it's been the fourth biggest, but it has more drunk driving deaths than LA, for example, home to the car. And number two is that a quarter of all people that have drunk drove have done it to go through a drive-through. We have an investor from Chipotle and Domino's. You know, if we can bring the food to you, then that's much better. In all seriousness, all these human errors, as we sometimes call them, but impairment, distraction, all these risks, those are things that we can help avoid and make life more convenient, right? How many times have you wanted to not have to go to the grocery store yourself on a Sunday night? If we can make that affordable for everyone, then that actually makes their life better at the same time as making the road safer because you could have wine with dinner and still get your grocery shopping done.
I want to hammer home, the most interesting thing I've heard in a long time is the drive-through stat. Because people are hungry, they're drunk, they need to soak it up with all that grease so they don't get a nasty hangover. And they do something silly because their stomach tells them to. I'll sit here and fast forward into the future. I know Bert won't predict it, but I'll go on a limb. Fast forward 5 years into the future, you're going to save a lot of lives. Like that statistic with the drive-thru is fascinating.
It's a little concerning, personally. But yeah, absolutely. People don't make great choices when they're drunk, obviously.
Yeah, no, people do stupid things, but you're gonna solve that problem. And in Bert's vehicle, there's no way for them to take over, and they can get them to and from the bar if that's where they choose safely. Is you gentlemen, look, you have the R1, Matthew, that's public and out there. Bert, you have, I call it the Zooksmobile. I know you've got a fancier name for it, but I call it the Zooksmobile. How do you see the design changing? Because I love that you two gentlemen authored a TechCrunch piece, and you had this great line in there. We don't just need an AV revolution. We need a design evolution. So, Bert, we'll start with you, and Matthew, I love your take on this as well. How are you imagining design of autonomous vehicles to change over the years? Well, going back to 2017, will more companies follow the Zooks, Neuro, and Local Motors lead, do you think, going into the future?
Well, I think you've started to see that. For us, when Zooks was founded in 2014, the idea had always been to create that new kind of people mover to help cities solve problems around safety and mobility and sustainability. And that vehicle is what we revealed at the end of last year. It was one of the biggest state secrets ever until we revealed it at the end of December 2020. And what's unique about the architecture is it's symmetrical. It's bidirectional. The front is the back. The back is the front. It allows for 360-degree view through all of the modes, the sensor modes. Three different kinds of sensor modes help the vehicle drive. So radar, camera, and LiDAR. There are also some other ultrasonics in there as well. That's the opportunity. That is what the future will look like. What I also think is important is the vehicle that we revealed in December is our first take at what a next generation autonomous vehicle would look like. Certainly not the last. We hope to be around for a long time producing all sorts of different form factors when it comes to our vehicles. And battery technology allows you to do that. There are lots of new kinds of technologies that allow you to imagine new form factors. I'm not the design guy, but I want to espouse good design. I want to help advocate for good design. I want to help people understand the benefits of why design matters when it comes to this technology. You can roll out a lot of really safe features, safe product features, some cool product features that will make the experience, Grace, I know we've talked about experience a lot, more enjoyable. And that's what we're really excited to make and to talk about.
It's really wonderful that you don't have to trip an alarm to see the vehicle anymore behind the curtain with all that alarms and security.
You tried, right? I think you'd just spend a night in the box when you tried.
I did. And then Andy Jassy says, oh, you can't do that. So, Matthew, how is the NeuroBot going to evolve? I know there's an R2 in the works. Is it going to go different form factors, or how will design for Neuro evolve in the future?
We're right now on R2. So R2 is on the road today. Our first one was R1. You will never guess what the next generation will be called. We're working on that new design that we've learned a lot in the first two generations. But one way we've done it is by deploying it in commercial services. So actually having this vehicle on the road, having these pilots and smaller scale deployments has been absolutely essential for us to learn about what we need for our next generation vehicle. So that's been a really valuable and critical experiences. And as we do that, I think you're going to see others learn from what we've been doing and say, hey, how can we improve on that? And so I think you'll see a lot more use cases. You know, I mentioned earlier that goods delivery wasn't even contemplated 5 years ago when we were founded and as a use case. And so what else is going to come in the future? We have to be able to take pizza. We know we have to be able to take your grocery bags, but what other use cases are going to come and what is the implication for design? Could we imagine a peer-to-peer example, right? So instead of going on Craigslist where you got to go over to some stranger's house to get your new outfit you bought online, you could send it with a Neuro. What does that mean for the shape of the vehicle? Should we have a bar that you can hang your clothes on or a dry cleaner that's sending your clothes home? There's all sorts of new designs that may be necessary or possible created by autonomy. I think we're just at the beginning of learning that. You know, for policymakers, going from the policy side of things, I think the lesson there is to be really flexible. Actually, unfortunately, the current regulation environment creates an incentive to do the opposite of that. Right? The incentive is it makes it easier to use an existing vehicle, an internal combustion engine vehicle that does not have any novel safety features, because that's been already, you know, validated by NHTSA. You don't need to do anything. And so I think the incentives, if policymakers want safer streets, they want more electric vehicles, they want more innovative applications that could create new commercial markets and new jobs, then is to actually work on how do we create a regulatory framework that supports innovation and vehicle design and not just assume that cars will be the same way they were for the last 50 years.
I would add to that too, right? There was a very robust and innovative automotive ecosystem that produced cars that created new innovations in the automotive industry for about 50 years before NHTSA came onto the scene, maybe a little bit longer. NHTSA is a 50-year-old agency. And so there was an industry that existed long before NHTSA. Now NHTSA came along and implemented new safety regulations because there were mounting deaths and injuries on our roadways happening in car crashes. And there's no doubt the agency and the regulations that the agency has promulgated have saved lives and reduced injuries on our roadways. Unfortunately, what we've seen over the past couple years is a rise in fatalities in injuries on our roadways. So 2020, a year when far fewer people were driving on the roads in the U.S. than previous years, 38,680 people killed on the roadways. That was an increase from the year before. That kind of thing should not be happening. And so we need to look to new safety innovations that will save lives and reduce injuries on our roadways. And this is not just rhetoric, right? These are lives at stake. We're not doing the right things if the numbers are going in the wrong direction. And what I would say is that these new technologies offer the promise of new safety innovations for our roadways.
Do we get to the point where in a local community they say, I don't want an internal combustion engine. I don't want that pollution on my street. I don't want it in my neighborhood where it goes house by house by house. And you two gentlemen know politics better than most. You have a grassroots uprising. Do we get some point there where you get that local community gets involved and says, I don't want this here? Matthew, do we get to that point that really helps usher in electrification? So for example, your public with Chipotle, I order a Chipotle burrito and it comes in a beautiful Neurobot, and it's, and I don't have to deal with the smoke or the, if the muffler's broken. Sorry, muffler man or Midas, I'm very sorry. But you got a clean solution. Does that happen?
Well, I think we're starting to see it. You know, I mentioned California at the state level said by 2030, we don't want any AVs that are not electric. If you look at a place like Santa Monica, they've created a zero emission urban zone where they're really prioritizing delivery applications. So I think you are seeing different communities that are saying, we're going to have zones that are zero emission and we're going to only allow vehicles in there, or we're going to privilege vehicles that go in there in some way that are zero emission to encourage this because we want cleaner air. One of the things that people think about electric vehicles is climate change, which is absolutely critical. Of course, it is a massive threat. We're just coming out of COP26 here, where, and electric vehicles can make a big contribution to that. But local air pollution is also really important. And it is particulate matter, which comes from tailpipes, as well as tires from heavier vehicles, brake pads. That is the biggest preventable killer in America. And it is a leading cause of asthma. And so we need to do more to get reduce that as a threat. And transportation is a major cause of that. So if we can have cleaner vehicles that are not only electric, but also lighter, because weight makes a big difference on this too. And electric vehicles tend to be heavier. So having lighter electric vehicles is critical. If we can do that by redesigning the car, that actually is going to make for cleaner air in our communities. And also it's just more pleasant. And one last point here is on the equity side, many of the trucks and warehouses that are being built and much of the local air pollution happens in communities of color, disproportionately affected. So I think if we want local delivery it's going to be keep on growing. We know consumers are demanding that. It's got to be electric and it's got to be thinking about local air pollution too.
You're right about that. I have a lot of friends that work in the restaurant industry and own restaurants and quick service restaurants. And there we've been having discussions about different fleets, and the fleets are coming to the end of life. They will not have a discussion with anybody unless the first thing out of your mouth is electric. Nope, don't want to have a discussion with you. I'm not going to work with you. If you can figure out how to electrify it, I'll have a discussion. So you're starting to see that really interesting impact from the franchisees, the restaurant owners. That's a really positive step.
Well, and I mean, you think about that too, right? And the opportunities that exist with real estate and how to turn real estate into charging and maintenance facilities for these kinds of fleets, which is thinking about land use and how you use it. You want to use it a lot, make sure you're getting all the value that you can out of it. And there's a huge opportunity there.
And I know this is out of both your gentlemen's swim lanes. That's where I'm going here. But I want to electrify the ocean. I mean, you see these, I'm in the ocean practically every day, and you see these big polluting things are making all this smell, and I don't want to ruin my reef. So next, then, once you figure out save for vehicles, please build a coalition for boats in the ocean. So when I go out in the ocean and enjoy it, I'm enjoying it the way that God made it. So please make that 2.0 of your coalition.
A modest additional goal.
You should start your own.
When you come over for Christmas, Bert, we can have a discussion. Just like you and Matthew had coffee, you and I are going to have wine. So we can have a discussion next thing you know. We got an ocean coalition going on. To make these goals happen, will the coalition lobby, advocate? Well, you can focus on the federal level. You're going to focus on the state level, local level. Where are you going to go to try and educate policymakers and all the interests that are involved around it that, hey, this is good for society, this is good for your community, and oh, by the way, it's good for the economy.
That's our message. That's what we tell them. This is why we want to be in your community, and we think that there are a lot of opportunities. And we meet a lot of people that want us here yesterday. So that's what's exciting. And I think back to one of the topics or questions you raised earlier for what a community or city wants. There will also be people in that same community or city that don't want. And so you have to be prepared to deal with both when it comes to pretty much anything. And we're focused on cities and big cities. The market is for moving people around. And there are people in cities and big cities that want us here yesterday. And that there are people that are a little bit more skeptical and never want this kind of technology on public roads. And it's our job to be prepared to deal with both sets of interests.
Matthew, building on that, how do you strike that balance where you don't completely alienate one person, where they try and put the brakes every which way they can on what you're trying to achieve?
We put a lot of emphasis on community engagement before we launch. Of course, talking to the leaders of the community, policymakers, council members, mayor, law enforcement, but also going to local events. This weekend, we're at the Listies Gala in Houston, where I was hosted by the poet laureate, Outspoken Bean. You know, just making connections in the community there at the Bel Air Art Festival on Sunday. I think these are places where we can actually just meet people, introduce the vehicle, explain it when it's in a non-mobile setting, so they can actually ask all their questions about it and understand the technology before they see it on the street. So I think that is absolutely critical. At the same time, we have to be open to feedback. This is a technology that's also being tested, right? It's a technology that's doing deliveries. Unlike a gig worker-based model, all of our vehicles look the same. We're coming out of the Kroger parking lot with the orders. If you live two doors down from that Kroger store, you'll probably see our vehicles a lot. And so we need to be realistic about that it's not actually any additional cars. We're replacing a trip from someone that's taking themselves to the store, but it looks like the cars are driving a lot because they all look the same and they're all going from the same store. So I think that could create, it requires some education, but there's also going to always be some people that don't want that. And we need to listen to their concerns and accommodate them however we can.
But you at Nuro, Bird at Zooks, solve the biggest problem of ride sharing: product consistency. The Nurobot is a consistent experience every time it arrives to my house. Every time I get into a Zooks vehicle, it's a consistent experience. To me, that's the Achilles heel of ride sharing. And your company solves that. And when you solve that, you're going to grow to massive amounts of riches. Because in your TechCrunch article, there was this great, great line. And it sums it up beautifully. After all, building an AV without any changes in vehicle design is like building a cell phone with a rotary dial. I had a rotary phone. I remember my finger would get caught in there. It was no fun. Driving sometimes is no fun. Both companies are solving that problem. What is the backstory behind the statement? Because the statement nails it.
Well, I think we've got to give credit to former Road to Autonomy guest Greg Rogers for coining this phrase. But I think that the inspiration behind this is that we have an incredible opportunity right now with autonomous vehicles to address the major challenges in our transportation system. And if we don't take this chance to rethink the car and make something new, something that's electric, that can be shared, that keeps our families safe, that frankly makes our lives more convenient than sitting in traffic on the way to wherever we're going to the store, then we really will not have made the most of this opportunity. We will have left a lot on the table. And so if we want to build the next iPhone, something that'll have as big an impact in the physical world as the smartphone and has had in the digital world, we need to be innovative and create room for new products like novel vehicle designs of R2 and the Zooks vehicle.
And imagine how foreign the idea of an internal combustion engine car is taking over the road would have been when we were sort of in the middle of the age of the horse and carriage. And now, of course, we don't see too many horses and carriages on public roads, but if people want to, they can still go ride horses. You'll still see that for conventional human-driven cars, opportunities to potentially do that. But I think once the benefits of this technology are experienced and are seen, and we start to see a meaningful move in the reduction of fatalities and injuries on our roadways, less pollution, less congestion, the shift will be pretty profound. The other huge idea here is price, right? You think about the number one cost in the movement of people and goods, right? It is that driver, right? That human driver. And, as people recognize the opportunity to potentially pay less for transportation, right, you will see more adoption. We are quite a ways from that. It's not going to be an overnight transition. It's going to be a transition that will take place over time. And so we have to be able to address some of the very, very real concerns about the labor economy when it comes to drivers. Part of the SAVE Coalition is going to be addressing some of those questions and explaining the transition. But I think the whole paradigm around ground mobility will shift. Some decades into the future, we will be able to look back and say, I cannot believe we saw this many human-driven polluting cars on the road.
The kids of tomorrow won't put up with it. And Matthew, as you look to make the most of this opportunity, as SAVE matures and grows up, will you be adding new members over the years?
We're definitely open to that. Yeah, I think we've already started to hear from some folks. And if you're listening to this podcast and have a electric autonomous vehicle with a novel design, we'd love to engage, because the more people that are helping spread this message, the better it'll be, the more applications we can point to.
You use the word novel. I use the word bespoke, and I can't wait to a great designer rolls up his sleeves and partners with a company and develops a beautiful bespoke vehicle, because it's a canvas for an artist. And both Zooks and Neuro, you have incredible artists and designers, and they built something beautiful. Now I can't wait to somebody from the fashion world design something even more beautiful. And gentlemen, as we put this into context, I have a question. In your opinions, what is the future of autonomy? And Matthew, we'll start with you, please.
Well, I think the future of autonomy is electric. It's shared. And I think it's going to look pretty different than it does today. I think there'll be many more shapes and sizes and speeds of vehicles on the road. You know, you see the sign that says share the road. We'll have a lot more icons on that. I think that it's not going to be 30 different lanes for every different use, right? We're going to have to work together. But I think that autonomy makes possible that diversity of uses and shapes and sizes of vehicles. And a lot of it, the last thing is the future is unknown. I talked about some examples that I had thought of, right, about the Craigslist and a Neurobot, but there's many more that I haven't even thought of or couldn't even imagine. And I'm excited to see people invent them.
And I'll just say the future of autonomy is customer centric, and it will be demand driven in terms of what will be developed for society, right? Customers want more safety, or at least they should want more safety. They want more sustainability in their transportation. They want more mobility options and opportunities. They want unique experiences. And so we'll learn a lot over the coming years about what customers want. And it's going to be really exciting.
Bert, as we look to wrap up this insightful conversation, and thank to you and Matthew for pulling back the curtains on what the SAVE Coalition is and what you're looking to achieve, what would you like our listeners to take away with them?
As we've talked about, right, it's going to be new, right? There will be a lot of new experiences, new visual experiences, new riding experiences that people will have as this technology rolls out. I think it's really important to not get sucked into a lot of the headlines you see around this technology. There is still a lot of development left to take place in this technology before it will be prolific, before members of the public will be able to use it and experience it. A lot of safety testing will have taken place. There'll be a lot of data collected that will have supported the public release of this technology on public roads. And I think for the most part, you know, the industry takes its role in the development of this technology and the safe development of this technology very, very seriously. There is a lot at stake and a big incentive to get this right.
Congress just passed a massive infrastructure bill. That bill is a massive, largest ever investment in our current roadways. If we just use those roads in the same way, we're not going to get the full benefit of this investment and of this new technology. And so I think that it comes back to the opportunity that we have here, right? We have an opportunity with autonomous vehicles to make those roads not just the same cars, but cleaner cars, cars that are shared and batching trips, cars that are not even cars anymore, but bots, and are much safer. And I think that opportunity is one that we need to actually take action to and be deliberate about, because right now the government incentives are towards internal combustion engines. They're towards traditional vehicles. If we want that future, we'll need to take action on the policy realm as well as in the consumer realm to start using these new products.
I said this before, I'll say this again. Policy teams are the rock stars in the autonomous vehicle companies. I get a lot of pushback for it, but you gentlemen on the policy teams are the rock stars, because you can invent the world's greatest widget, but without the right policy, You have no company. You have no revenue. You have no business. So Matthew Bird, for the work that you two gentlemen do in policy, thank you to all the other men and women that work in policy and autonomous vehicle companies. Thank you, because you are making this a reality. And as Matthew said so brilliantly, autonomy makes possible. Policy makes autonomy possible. Matthew Burt, the two of the founding members of the SAVE Coalition, thank you so much for coming on the Road to Autonomy today, because the future is bright, the future is autonomous, and the future is bespoke vehicle design. Gentlemen, thank you so, so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Great to be with you guys.
Thank you, Grayson. You're very kind.
Thank you for listening to the Road to Autonomy podcast. If you've enjoyed listening, please rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Want to get in touch? Follow us on Twitter at Road to Autonomy or email podcast@brulteco.com. The Road to Autonomy is produced by Brulte & Company. The views and opinions expressed on the Road to Autonomy podcast do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Brulte & Company. The content discussed on this podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be taken as legal, tax, investment, or business advice.